Portland school board elections are May 19th. What are the candidates saying?
Hi, I'm Mike Rosen, and I'm a Portland Public Schools parent. I would describe myself as a watchdog and a volunteer of 15 years. I'm currently running unopposed for Portland School Board Zone 7, and I hope that I'll be able to significantly alter the culture of the board as well as the policy and budget decisions they make over the next 4 years.
Tune into KBOO April 27th through the 30th at 5:45 for special school board election coverage.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Monday, April 27th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Our guest today is Doug Hatt. He is with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. He'll be joining us for a few minutes to bring everyone up to date on why indigenous people, native people, the Indian tribes, see the problem of sea lions from a different perspective. Let's not forget that it is, for the large part, white people who have decimated salmon populations. It would be a very good time right now for commercial fishermen to step aside and let indigenous people handle it. It's their river, after all. And it's certainly, the time is well past due. The bill is way past due. And, of course, the top story today, at least 3,617 people are now known to have died in the massive earthquake which hit Nepal on Saturday. Something to bear in mind, for a while now, seismic activity has increased and more problems have increased due to global warming, temperatures rising in Nepal, glaciers and so forth on the mountains, as land under glaciers warms and the glaciers themselves melt. What's been happening is lakes, which have existed for thousands of years, are the dams which create the lakes. These are natural dams, not human-made dams. As those melt, the threat of massive, catastrophic flooding has been present for a number of decades now. The shift in the weight as glaciers melt has caused the land to change in ways that have not been discussed when we talk about this earthquake. Right now we have Doug Hatch with Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission joining us to talk a little bit about how indigenous people see the problem of sea lions. Good morning, Doug. Welcome to the KBOO Airways. We're very fortunate to have you.
Good morning. Also with me is Sarah Thompson from our media department.
Good morning, Sarah. It's great to have you on also. Thank you. Okay, so the perspective, how do indigenous people, people, tribes who have a right to the salmon through the river, to the control of conditions on the river and in the river, how do you see it from the Intertribal Fish Commission perspective?
This is Sarah. I mean, the tribes recognize that we live in a very altered ecosystem within the Columbia Basin. I mean, we live in a basin where we manage water, we manage fisheries, we manage everything very carefully. And we recognize that sea lion predation at Bonneville Dam and in the Lower River has become another factor that we have to manage for if we're going to successfully rebuild salmon populations throughout the river system.
So from the perspective of tribal fisheries, How would you prefer to manage the problem of sea lions eating fish, which is the least of the problems that salmon have. Let's talk dams. Let's talk about overfishing by white commercial fishers. There are so many other factors that really have pounded fish populations. Or how do you see the sea lion issue, and how would you want ideally to handle it?
But the sea lion issue is a new and emerging one to deal with, and it's not a small problem by any means. At Bonneville Dam itself, there was 116 sea lions there last week, which is a record high, an all-time record high that's been counted there. There's also a NOAA report last year with losses of salmon between the estuary and Bonneville, and that report, after accounting for harvest and turn off to lower river tributaries and handling mortality and whatnot, estimated that there was about 100,000 salmon were lost between the estuary and Bonneville. Now, those are not associated necessarily with sea lion predation, but it is the biggest unaccounted for factor. So whatever that factor is, whatever the mortality agent is, we need to get a better handle on it in the lower river and address that in concert with all of the other actions that are going on with, as Sarah said, with the hydro system, harvest management, hatchery management, and habitat improvement investments.
So this is the problem with sea lions and salmon. It seems that the creatures would coexist under natural conditions, and that this is something that is relatively new. How do we account for that?
There's a growing population size of California sea lions. The population has been growing at an incredibly fast rate for the last, since 72, when the Marine Mammal Protection Act was passed. And so now we have populations over 300,000 of California sea lions, and we don't have really any management tools to help us check that population and to check its impacts on salmon populations.
Before we let you go, and you've been very, very generous with your time, how would you ideally manage the problem of sea lions, the predation on the salmon?
You know, the tribes have recognized the need for removal. How that removal happens or occurs, whether they're removed to zoos and aquarium or removed through humane euthanasia, we don't really have an opinion on how that removal occurs, but removal is something that the tribes have supported.
Thank you so much for that. Anything else you'd like to just leave listeners with before we let you go?
I don't think so. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you so much. You've been absolutely wonderful. My guests have been Sarah Thompson and Doug Hatch with the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. Thanks again for that, everyone. We, want to talk about the earthquake in Nepal and other adjacent nations. It should come as no surprise that something of this magnitude was in the deck somewhere. The changes, global warming, call it whatever you like, but the changes that we underestimate, the changes that are occurring all around us. And in seismically active areas such as Nepal and all of the Himalayan countries, it should come actually as no surprise that something like this would occur. And again, it is something that we wonder right now what steps would have to be taken to really make a dent in global warming, to do whatever we can as a planet to slow this down and possibly save thousands of lives. Right now, the death toll, as of a few minutes ago, was 3,617, as I said. That number is, of course, growing. More than 6,500 people, much more, have been injured, according to the National Emergency Operations Center, and dozens of people, of course, in all the other countries. More than 200 climbers, and of course, that's what they naturally, they're going to go after them because, of course, they're foreign nationals, and so have a huge import. Officials warn that the number of casualties are going up. Initial reports, many, many communities. This was centered around the Gurkha area. So that said, this is a part of the world that I'm very, very familiar with. I lived in Nepal for years. And the thought of the temples that have crumbled, the thought of the people, the families, their houses. This is a very ancient culture. And the rebuilding of it is going to be a challenge to all of us worldwide. That said, I want to move closer to home and talk a little bit about the astonishing, extraordinary recent earthquake activity across Oklahoma. There is a terrific website that tracks Oklahoma earthquakes. Here's today's report for just for today. 4 earthquakes today, 33 earthquakes in the past 7 days. 192 earthquakes in the past month, and nearly 2,000 earthquakes in Oklahoma over this past year. They break that down by county, but a wide area of central Oklahoma has now been included in this extraordinary uptick in activity. It isn't, even those who don't like to admit it have to concede that it's induced seismicity. It's caused, of course, by human activity, by using underground chambers as a place to store the waste from mining activity. There have been protests in Oklahoma, several groups including the Sierra Club and at least one state lawmaker have called on state officials to issue a moratorium on this wastewater injection into wells in 16 counties. Count them, 16 counties. Energy industry officials have said a moratorium would effectively end oil and gas drilling in those areas. And officials at Oklahoma Corporation Commission, which regulates all of this stuff, all the oil and gas operations, have said that they don't think they have the legal authority to issue a moratorium. Well, they apparently thought they had the legal authority to do it in the first place, so you have to wonder where this legal authority begins and ends. That said, we have about a minute left. The Smithsonian is allowing climate denial mega funder David Koch to co-op the science presented in its museums. I kid you not. The particularly appalling exhibit at the National Museum of Natural History, which, no irony intended, is David H. Koch Hall of Human Origins. And perhaps I ought to add parentheses and home of the demise of the human species, thanks to Koch Brothers' corporate efforts. It attempts to downplay the impact of massive, rapid global climate change. That's what this exhibit is about. Where is it? It's in the Smithsonian. On that note, this has been Air Cascadia for Monday, April 27, 2015. Kate Welch engineered the show. Thanks, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is a KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
You can help KBOO end the spring membership drive early. Donate right now and be entered into the spring membership drive sweepstakes. One lucky KBOO supporter will win a prize package that includes a six-month VIP pass to the Crystal Ballroom that allows you and a guest entry to every show, even if it's sold out, as well as access to the VIP viewing area. A one-week artist residency at Southwestern Lodge in Seaview, Washington on the Long Beach Peninsula, $200 in gift certificates to the Portland Saturday Market, and 10 treatments at Working Class Acupuncture. For every $15,000 we raise between now and May 5th, we will remove one day from the spring membership drive, which will be from May 6th